welcome to the Lisa Fisher Said podcast. I'm Lisa Fisher, a longtime broadcaster and journalist, and now a health coach based in Arkansas who's been in front of a microphone or a camera since the 1980s. I think of myself as the queen of Arkansas media. I started this podcast in 2020 to help you live a better life. In fact, I hope this podcast is the most informative 45 minutes of your week. For this episode, I have an impressive 24-year-old YouTube sensation who will inspire you to do your own research to form your opinions about healthcare. He's no lab coat required on social media, and his name is Johnny Cole Dixon, and you'll get to meet him right after this. Like you, I sometimes have a conundrum on what to fix, what to cook, what to prepare, whether you're like me, an intermittent faster, and you kind of, you know, limit the amount of hours in the day you eat, or if you're grazing all day. It doesn't matter to me. You got to eat. RalstonFamilyFarms.com can help. Well, in two ways. One, because of the products you can get. You can buy the rice there. You can find a store that's near you that sells Ralston Family Farms. Tons do, people, tons. But it's where I get my inspo are the recipes. So if you go to RalstonFamilyFarms.com, you click on the recipes link, and you'll get to see the different options and Instant Pot cooking instructions for those of you with the Instant Pot. I'm kind of crazy about this fajita fiesta made with the purple rice, which is one of my favorites. The kimchi fried rice, I'm all about the kimchi right now because of what it does for your gut health. Made with the golden rice. In fact, I made this recipe recently. Golden rice, 15 minutes. Actually, I made it the day before in the rice cooker because that was a tip from a friend of mine who knows Korean cooking. And I made it the next day with the Ralston Family Farms golden rice and the fried rice. I had some fried eggs with it. We had some meat and vegetables. I mean, chef's kiss on this, people. Find out more by going to their website, RalstonFamilyFarms.com. I love to tell my friends and followers of my social media about the beauty and the mystique of Marlsgate. Marlsgate.com is the website. Those of us in Central Arkansas know about it. It's 15 minutes from downtown Little Rock, over 1,100 acres that has stood the test of time, this property, since the 1850s. Just the third owners, Martha Ellen and Beau Talbot, have taken it and put their own spin on it. Since 2017, that's when the Talbots thought, okay, let's have another project. They do a lot of things. They're the people behind Scott Station there. They're the people behind the shops at Scott. They do a lot to invest in that community. And one thing is open up the doors of Marlsgate to you and me on Thursdays. So if you're in Central Arkansas, even if you're outside of the area and want to just come explore the property with the pecan orchards, and you can just see the old mixed in with the new, and it is absolutely breathtaking. They have tenderly loved it, and it's very impressive. It's where maybe, you know, you've been to a wedding there, or I host cooking classes there, or I mean, just so many different things. It is their private and personal home that they've opened, but you can also take advantage of some of the different opportunities they have given the community to enjoy it. Find out more by going to their website, marlsgate.com.
She won most talkative in high school, and she has been running her mouth ever since. Welcome to the Lisa Fisher Said podcast with your host, Lisa Fisher.
All right, you're either a chemist, a mad scientist, or you have split the atom, but Johnny Cole Dixon, you've blown my mind with your YouTube channel. How did you, I mean, are you in medicine? Are you a physician?
So I made up my own job title. My own job title right now, what I go by is I am an expert learner. And
we should all be.
Yes, I believe it's a mindset. We should all be. And I actually, my job really, what I do is I spend a lot of time explaining things, but in order for me to explain them well, I actually have to learn them first.
I understand.
So I'm learning from the experts, but I just communicate the information that they already have done the research and the work on. So that's the fundamental difference between me and a physician besides the schooling, obviously. But my background is in exercise science and nutrition. That's what I studied in college.
Okay.
And that's kind of where I found myself. There's really a whole story behind that, if you do want to get into that. But essentially, right now, you can just call me an expert learner.
Were you a D1 athlete? I remember in one of your videos saying you were a runner.
I was a runner. Track and field was my bread and butter. I did that for 8 years, nearly 10.
Wow.
And actually, it took a back seat once I started making videos in college. And that's when I started to depart and start to focus more on making videos. So,
do you know how important this is in this age of communication and the fact that there's a lot of miscommunication that they blame on us in the alternative space? You know, YouTube, as you know, is starting to censor things that don't fit their definition of medical information. And you don't know what that's going to be. You know, we don't know if it's going to be about butter or salt, the things that we were told that we've been told to stay away from. You and I are saying, no, eat it, eat it, eat it, eat it. So does that worry you at all?
It worries the heck out of me. And I think about where people are getting their information from. I've thought long and hard about this, actually, because there's essentially three places we get our information from if we're not intentionally seeking it elsewhere. Number one is anecdotes from our parents.
Right.
We grew up and we hear things from our parents. Number two is advertisements. And
right.
Number three is the I heard system, I like to put it.
Yeah.
So the anecdotes you hear think from your parents, don't do that. Eat your vegetables, do this. Very mm-hmm. self-explanatory.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing with advertisements, which are mostly subliminal, we don't necessarily mm-hmm. realize, a classic drug commercial, people skipping through the park and they're all happy and they're go lucky. And
yeah.
then it cuts to the side effects and there's some guy talking really fast. That's advertisements. And then there's advertisements for seemingly more healthy foods that are just processed foods in disguise, but they're advertised as healthy due to their marketing. We deem it as such. And then number three would be the I heard system. And this one, I believe, plagues us the most in modern day. And the I heard system is essentially us coming across information passively that affects our thinking internally, because I may not, take information. We take a lot of information for face value, and a lot of times we don't even realize we're doing it, I should say. So the I heard system is really just saying, hey, I heard butter is not good for you, so I'm going to stay away from it. I heard keto is effective, so I'm just going to jump on the keto wagon. I heard this, I heard that. And I just wonder how many people are being driven by simply what they heard. And the reason it scares me that people are being censored in a way, and it's really touchy nowadays. You can't really talk about certain topics, mm-hmm. and there's this kind of siphoning out information, and you can't really be too sure of certain credentials and all this other stuff. But really, what scares me is the fact that if they're not getting it from the books and the health communicators, you and I, then where are they getting it?
Mm.
Because it's not in schools. It's not in college unless you take specific electives and your professor really cares. You're not going to get this information. So our job is really to just dig into the academic white paper, or what I do specifically, I'll break it down. I dig into the academic white paper and I'm getting my greasy little fingers in there for any information that could potentially be of value to my audience. And my goal is to piece it together so that I can actually say, hey, this actually, the research says the saturated fat actually is not the cause of cardiovascular disease.
Right.
So how did we end up here? And then I can take people on that loop, you know?
Yeah. So of the things as an expert learner that you've learned pursuing this as a career and as an objective to know more, what has been the biggest surprise to you of those topics? Is it about butter? The misinformation?
I will say, I've learned a lot about salt. I've learned
Isn't
a lot
it magical?
About salt.
Oh, it's magical. I have some in my purse. Look.
Do you?
Yeah. You know why? Because I'm on a 48-hour fast. And because I'm not getting my electrolytes, Y'all, I am eating salt like a drug addict. I'm taking
there
it and taking
go.
A hit and doing this with my little Redmond sea salt, because that's what that, and I'm drinking some tea right now. I'm on hour 45. Of a 48-hour fast.
Wow.
And people ask all the time, how do you do it? And I go, salt. They're like, absolutely. But that's bad for you. And I go, oh no, it's got 84 essential minerals that keep you alive. If you get the good stuff, not the processed crap in the blue bottle. So what was it for you that, where did you find the information of the things, of the ads, anecdotes, and I heard you went to the academic white paper then to find the truth?
I spend majority of my time reading academic white paper. I understand these are people who are dedicated to finding answers. Scientists are dedicated to finding answers. That's their job, right? Researchers do this for a living, and they understand the ins and outs a little bit more than I do. I just know how to go in there and extract the information that I deem necessary. So I actually, not too long ago, made an entire kind of deep dive on salt and how we ended up with our conceptions about salt. And I did not expect, I'll say this, my research phase for video can be anywhere from literally 2 days to 2 weeks. And that video took me quite longer to come up with my answers, but it was because the salt is actually a more expansive topic. Not only that, but there is kind of an underlying fire-fueled debate underlying the topic. It wasn't just about who's being, it wasn't just about the science. I learned that it was about who's being right. And there was ego behind it. And there was people who were driven by confirmation bias. And I uncovered this entire thing. I'll just to be more specific, there's a scientist by the name of Lewis Kitchener-Dahl. And they're the guy who's going by the three things in one, using all three of his names. Lewis Kitchener-Dahl.
Yeah.
He was a great scientist. He really understood the methodology. He performed great research. However, if you look at his work, a lot of it was driven by an idea of something that he already confirmed. He essentially was driven by confirmation bias. And all of his research was almost looking to prove his already made up point. Mm-hmm. And it's still good research, but how can we tell if it's genuine if you aren't going through the steps to make sure that you're asking yourself, how can I be wrong here? So because it lacked that, there were some other really smart people who understood that and were able to learn and communicate, hey, this actually isn't how salt works and all this other stuff. But essentially, he was the originator of this idea of salt is bad, and it kind of blew up. And there's a parallel with him in a lot of the information that we get from what I call the I heard system. Like, I heard this about saturated fat. The scientist behind saturated fat who we studied was Ansel Keys.
You know what? And I've said this before and people have come at me. So don't come at me with this, but I said that he was that generation's Anthony Fauci because he had a bone to pick. He had to prove it, and he went to every depth, even though the science was turning a different way for Ansel Keys about the heart health hypothesis and fat and all these things. He still pounded the pavement saying, no, I'm going to stand by this. And then we find out there's money involved. A la Anthony Fauci, I'm done here. Please do not put a target on my back. And YouTube, please keep me on your platform.
Exactly.
But you see my point.
I absolutely see your point. It's not too far off. And really, what I am a fan of is true, legitimate science. I love understanding how the body works.
But Johnny, there's so much money involved now.
It's crazy.
So the people in my space, the intermittent fasters who eat high fat diets, when we see these twin studies on Netflix, the new twin study, it's sponsored, y'all, by the fake meat people. I mean, follow the money. And then there's another new study. Just find who put the money behind it and then go, oh, well, that's not objective. People think that science is always objective, and it's not.
It's not. It's not. And it's funny you bring that documentary up because I started watching it. And I could tell by kind of their subliminal messaging almost toward the middle, I had to start watching. I was like, I know where this is going.
Right. Me too.
And you'd be absolutely shocked, but probably not you, Lisa, but folks would be absolutely shocked by how many times I'm reading a research paper and then I just Google the author and see what they're tied into.
Right.
And you'd be surprised that, like you said, follow the money. I was doing some investigative work on trying to figure out the difference between omega-6 and omega-3.
Oh, I'd love to hear that.
And there was a guy who was promoting soybean oil, and he was saying that soybean oil is anti-inflammatory and does not cause inflammation.
Stop.
Not only did he say this, this wasn't a conclusion that he drew. This was his title. And not
and that's a paper. That's a published
paper. This is a paper that you can look at. I can't remember the exact head author's name. But actually, if you look at the head author's name, you just kind of do a little bit of digging. You see that he's actually a chairman of a soybean company.
Of course.
And I mean, you gotta put two and two together, yes. Right? So that's actually part of my job. I want to be a trusted person in the sense to say, hey, I've actually checked not only the research, but the people behind it to try to get an answer. To me, if I could just break it down to saying, hey, this is actually how the body functions, and this is what the literature is saying. Understand the difference, but let's make some sense of it all, right? And that's really the end goal.
Do you remember about a year ago, and I've used this example on my podcast, but it was so fascinating and it was so telling to me, but Leslie Stahl from 60 Minutes was interviewing the head of some, you know, part of this administration's health team that was telling us that, number one, obesity is genetic, which those of us in the health space do not think that. I mean, we say you can turn your genes on and off. You turn them on by eating a lot of Cheetos and Cokes and drinking and eating all day. Okay. Or you can turn it off. And so she said it was obesity was genetic and that we're going to start putting children on Ozempic, Mounjaro, blah, blah, blah. Well, I did the research because I'm a journalist. And so I always want to know Novo Nordisk. I think that's how you pronounce that. Novo Nordisk, who makes Ozempic, paid her $20,000 the year before.
Wow.
That should have been stated in the interview. Yes, I'm here to promote it. Oh, well, they did pay me last year.
Yeah.
I mean, why did Leslie Stahl make that a connection?
Yeah, I can't even make a sponsored YouTube video without disclosing the fact that there is somebody paying me to say this about their brand. It's called common decency, right? And I think it's our right to be skeptical. But I do want to be careful here because a lot of times health communicators, and I think we suffer from this, we suffer from hyper-skepticism in the way.
Yeah,
and
that's
true. Usually
we have to, though.
We do, and there's a healthy amount, I'd say, because we tend to be extremely skeptical of institutions. So any health communicator, really, we have a almost like a anti-USDA, anti-FDA, anti-CDC.
I'm there now, but I don't think the majority of consumers are.
Yeah. And really what it comes down to is understanding what value they give and then literally being able to separate the meat from the bones. And that's what I do. I'm not necessarily going to the CDC for all of my research, but right. I know they have great cross-references on researchers that look into disease trends. That's about as far as I'm going to dip my hand in that pool. Okay. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so
what
I'm saying is that there's value in all of these things. I think we sometimes suffer from hyper-skepticism. And what I'll also add on to that is that this does not only go for institutions, but this goes for health communicators and their size. A little bit more of a niche spin on this, but what I'm getting at is that we want to oftentimes be the people that discover a new thing. Yeah. We don't want to be the people that kind of hopped on the bandwagon after it was big, right? And I think that can really hinder us. I know once I'm somewhat decent on YouTube, but I know when you get to over a million and you start seeing all of these numbers, folks are going to come across me and they're going to say, he's big, but why is he this big? What's behind this? And we just kind of naturally are skeptic and we kind of think anything that's big is like kind of shady. What's going on here? What's really behind this? And I'm not immune to this at all. Yeah. Right. I came across, I'll give you an example and then we can go on. But Vani Hari, the food babe. So I was doing a little bit of digging on on a topic that I was looking into. And sometimes I end up on YouTube and I seen an interview with her and she talked about her brand, Truvani. And I looked into Truvani. This is before I recognized she was the food babe. I looked into Truvani and I was like, whoa, I never seen this brand before. This is incredible. Super, super high quality ingredients and all this other stuff. And then I'm looking into it and I'm like, but it's kind of big. Like, what's going on? And then I caught myself. I was going to be hyper skeptic. I was like, wait a second, Johnny, just because this is established and she's promoting the good does not mean that there is some shady business behind it. It's a business. So of course it's going to run like one. However, I say all that to say, I wish that every company had that level of transparency and that level of standard and integrity behind their quality. I think what she's doing is incredible. Yeah, it's too much money involved. But
it is.
I say all that to say that I did end up finding out that she was the food babe. And I was like, oh, wait, I've heard her name before. This is incredible. So one of the times I caught myself, but she's doing great work. Just to shout out her.
And I think it's fine that you have the healthy skepticism, because I don't think that's hyper skepticism. But where it muddies the water is then when people hijack those accounts to bring them down with misinformation, but then in the eyes of YouTube and Google and all those people, they've decided what is medical information and what's misinformation. So the swirling of the fact, I guess since COVID, I never knew that a platform could be shut down. I never in my wildest dreams, because I am a journalist and my job was always to present the facts of the story and tell them to you. And then you draw the conclusion. It wasn't my job to tell you to lean this way or that way.
Yeah.
And so that's the first time we saw it. And then the election. And now with the election and names on ballots, that's the same principle of some way deciding what you can and can't listen to or read, which I'm all about freedom. So. And that's why I like what you have to say.
It's only going to get worse.
I agree.
That's the worst part. It's only going to get worse. Nowadays, the way I cater to my audience is by being upfront and honest. And I try to just be extremely clear about, hey, this is the subject matter we're talking about. And one of the lines you're going to all, there's a word I use all the time. And if you watch any of my videos, you're going to hear this word. And that word is one of my favorites. It's nuance.
Yeah.
So I'm going to prevent a topic. I'm going to say, hey, I'm looking at one particular mechanism here, but there is a lot more nuance. If you void that video of saying that, folks are going to, you're going to get the comments of saying, but you missed this. And what about this? And what about this? So I like to put ism behind a lot of words. That's what I call what about ism.
It is a what about ism.
And it's like, at some point we got to hammer down and talk about the meat of it, guys. So can we just talk about kind of one thing? So I try to be very objective, obviously with including my personality and things of that nature, but really to kind of ease people from like, hey, I'm not taking a side. I'm just presenting the information. Mm-hmm. I like to be upfront, like, hey, this is what we're dealing with.
Well, what did you learn about seed oils? Because we didn't start here in the seed oil chatter until maybe 2 or 3 years ago. That's probably when I threw out everything. But now I'm seeing somebody who was saying how bad seed oils were, got on her page and said, I'm a nutritionist, I'm a dietitian, we think they're wonderful and you're wrong. So how are you explaining the seed oil controversy, as they say in the UK?
Controversy.
Yes.
So seed oil is, first off, technically, by definition, a processed food. Let's begin there.
There you go. Right.
You can't make, because of the nature of extracting the oil, you just can't do it from crushing the seed. You just can't do it from crushing the fruit as you would avocado, as you would olive, as you would coconut. You can make oil out of those things with four or less steps, maybe a two or three. And seed oils, you just can't. We're talking up to 7 steps just for them to simply exist, right? You got to extract the oil. If you take the soybean, for example, you got to extract, you got to dehull it first, and then you have to take the soybean itself. You got to crush it. Then you get a crude oil, and you get flakes on the side. So nothing in this process is going to go to waste.
Crude oil isn't that a lubricant, or isn't that what we power machinery with, crude oil?
Crude oil is by definition gross. You can't.
Okay.
We don't like to smell it, and we would probably gag if we even tried to swallow it.
So that's why they bleach it, right?
So now we're going to go ahead and bleach it. We're going to deodorize it. This takes care of the color. This takes care of the smell. And in order to process this, we're using two themes, two general things, and that's heat and pressure. Excessive heat and pressure. And any food, I don't care what we're talking about, excessive heat and pressure is not going to make out for a great product. So we beat the brakes off the oil in order for it to even exist. And then you think about its use case. We're going to go ahead and put it in this frying pan. We're going to leave it there at high temperatures over time. And what are we talking about here? What is the end result? What are we leading up to? And that is oxidation. Now, oxidation, the way I like to present it is just this, I present it as a simple definition. It's degradation or molecular breakdown of certain things in the body. And we need it, but we need it to a certain degree. We can overdo it. What we do when we consume seed oils is we provide our body with the ammunition to produce more oxidation. Because seed oils, if you quite literally zoom in and look at their molecular structure, they are more susceptible to free radical attack. Free radicals are these molecules that are unstable because they're missing an electron, but it just makes them highly reactive. And they actually are the driving, they're the boots to the ground army men, drivers of oxidation.
And of they disease? Make oxidation. I mean, is it okay to say of disease and inflammation?
Yes, eventually, yes, because oxidation and inflammation are the bed of all of our chronic diseases, right? They're the house in which our chronic diseases reside. So what soybean oil is, or seed oil, vegetable oil, however you want to put it, these oils are giving our body an opportunity to produce more oxidation. And that's just not fun for
anybody. And who thinks that's a good idea? How can the American Heart Association have a heart-healthy logo on the bottle of one of the canola oils? Like, I don't, of course, follow the money, but how can they sleep at night?
Yeah, I don't know because I question that kind of stuff. I'm like, you got to be missing some Z's or something. There's no way you're getting away with this.
You're not sleeping well, so you're not making good decisions. Go back, sleep 8 hours the next week, and then come back and tell me why you think something that increases inflammation would be something good for the health outcomes. The health outcomes in this country are right now so divided among the people who are, I mean, we know in my space, keeping insulin down, and then the others who keep their insulin up. And there are some providers who will say, no, there's no connection. There are some providers who will tell cancer patients, Johnny, diet has nothing to do. Nutrition has nothing to do with your cancer. I hear that all the time from my clients who come to me. And I say it has everything to do, and along with your high insulin levels, has everything to do with what's feeding the cancer because of the metabolic roots that is in cancer. So it just, you know, things right now, maybe that's what we're saying, are so binary in this country. You're either this or this with everything.
Oh my goodness.
That nobody can bend. I want to bend, but you'd have to do a lot of convincing for me to bend to accept the fact that you think seed oils is a good idea.
That's another thing that scares me. It's another ism in a way, this kind of binary way of thinking. It plagues us because there's no gray area anymore.
No.
I don't know the last time I've had a healthy discussion or anything online where I'm like, what about the nuance here? Right.
So
my goal really is to expand and live in the nuance. Like, you can't pin me. I'm not letting you pin me down because there's gotta be more to it. And what you end up doing is you go into a situation with your hypothesis. You do as much investigation on your hypothesis as you can. But a wise detective is going to say, how can I be wrong here? Because the truth is going to be somewhere in the middle. It's not all the way over here. Mm-hmm. It's not all the way over here. Mm-hmm. If you ask yourself, how can I be wrong here? I bet you're going to lean a little bit toward that gray area. And that is actually the spark in which you can provide the most value. So if I can find that target, regardless of the subject matter, we're working. People are going to eat it up.
If you've ever listened to my podcast, you know that I've talked about my friend Pat Becker Wallace, who's a philanthropist in Arkansas and in Oklahoma, in fact. And she devotes a lot of her time, attention, and resources to help different organizations. One is the Arkansas Symphony Orchestra here. Another one is anything to do with dogs and animals and the rescues. In fact, her love extends beyond that. At dogtalktv.com, where I want you to go and check out the books, because one of them is a book she's written and all the proceeds benefit a different organization. The book is A Carriage for Cowboy. It is so sweet, and it's about it's kind of an old-timey sport of carriage riding and driving. So it benefits the American Driving Society Incorporated, and that supports carriage drivers in the United States and Canada through education, events, rules for competition, and licensing of officials. It's a great family event that you'll now see it at different competitions. So she's written this book, A Carriage for Cowboy, which is about her daughter and her daughter's horse, Cowboy, and it is so sweet. Adding that to your library is a good thing. Adding any of the books from dogtalktv.com is a very good thing, because many of the proceeds, if it's one of her books, definitely goes to charitable organizations. She helps the rescues here, as I was saying, in Central Arkansas, but there may be one near you that it helps. If you love animals, go to that website, buy some books. You'll be thankful you did. dogtalktv.com.
Maybe that's it. Maybe media. I mean, I know because I've been in media for 37 years. Media dangles a carrot that gets people saying, wanting to watch or read or listen. And it could still be misleading. I mean, it could still be erroneous, but they'll stand by that. And maybe that's it. Can we say that science changes? Does science change?
I love that question. So science never change. Our dissemination has evolved. How we explain and communicate the science, you have to be sure of the person that's talking. You just do.
Yeah.
You got to know their heart behind it. You have to know their
intentions. You know how people will say, consider the source. If someone's telling you a story, consider the source. So that's it in what the science that is presented to us.
Yes. That's the ism I was thinking of. Drawing conclusions without all of the context ism. That's the ism. It's
Johnny's book of isms.
Yes, I have 1,000 isms that I try to avoid. And the reason is I like to just be aware of certain plagues that we can dip into when you're in this health space. Because what it could do is hinder your thinking. If it hinders your thinking, it's going to hinder how you look up your answers for things. And if you're hindering that, then your value decreases. My goal is to give people value. My mission is to give people insight and perspective. If you get a little bit of a broader perspective, I can expand your horizon just an inch wider after you leave my video. Like, I've won. I consider that a win. And this, I'll give you an example of kind of how we are without getting all of the context. And I was online on Instagram scrolling, deliberately wasting time. And Instagram knows now that their algorithm is designed to just give me
dopamine hit.
Yeah, I designed it so like I hit not interested on things I don't care about. Like, I'm probably the last person to talk about current events, unfortunately, but I am going to know that there's going to be memes present for me if I open an app. But anyways, I'm scrolling and I seen this video, and there was this guy who was riding a bike downhill. And he was riding the bike regularly, feet on the pedals, but then he kind of kicked his feet up and lied on his stomach, and he was lying in a Superman position. And he was going downhill in a Superman position. And he was riding like this for maybe 30 seconds. And then at the end of the video, he comes out of the Superman position, he puts his feet back on the pedals and starts riding regularly. I go to the comments just to see what people are saying. And one of the people say, yeah, that's a cool Superman trick, but how does he put his feet back on the pedals? I was like, wait a minute. You didn't watch the whole video,
no.
Did you?
No.
But you still commented.
And all the time.
I think, exactly, you still commented without all the context. So what he did was he drew his conclusion. He commented, how can we go to a theme park, ride one ride, and then write a review on a theme park? There's 20 other rides you didn't get on, right? And I think this is something that plagues us. And it's because of the avenue in which we consume our topics and our information these days. It's mostly online. It's mostly social media. It's moving quick. You get a headline and you have to take that for face value.
Yeah,
unless you're I guess, willing to dive into the actual, like,
clickbait. Right. Clickbait is real. So they absolutely are trying to pull you in with the shocking headline. And then when you read it, that wasn't even about the shocking headline. It was about something else.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. Of your videos, we need to talk about the enemy, and that is sugar. Like, people really aren't discussing it. Why? Because ultra-processed foods, these companies spend billions in research and development so that you're more hooked on their M&Ms or Lay's potato chips tomorrow than you were today, because they, and Dr. Fung explains this, the intermittent fasting, the father of intermittent fasting, that it circumvents the hypothalamus's ability to send out cholecystin kinin and leptin, which are your satiety hormones. They work it real hard, because in order for those to fire, you have to have fat and protein. And none of those products I'm talking about have both fat and protein. They have fat and salt. And that gives you a desire for more. So what have you learned about sugar that we need to know about?
On that note, that's very interesting. That's essentially the hyperpalatability of the foods that they're making, right? They're
creating,
developing
it. Like mad scientists. Nothing of it comes for, I always tell my clients, if God made it, eat it. Nothing in that God made, I mean, that I can think of.
I had a friend very recently ask a simple question I've never been asked before. And he said, good friend of mine, he says, what's wrong with fast food? Why is fast food bad for me? And I've never been asked for that question before. And it actually made me think a little bit more than I thought I would have been thinking. I thought I just knew it off the top. Like, oh, fast food is bad for this, and this, and this, and this.
So what was your answer? Because I have one.
It took me a little bit to think of an answer, because I wanted it to be clear and concise. And I thought of three things. One we already talked about, which is oil. That's a big one.
Yes.
It just gives our, it turns our blood vessels into a battle zone. Yeah. It's really ugly, nasty stuff. So oil and oxidation. And then the second thing I'd go with is, depending on the fast food, obviously, is the meat. I'm not interested in the meat. And, you know, they a lot of times you hear, we are what we eat, but then there's also, if you extend it, we are what we eat.
Right. Isn't that fascinating? But exactly. So that's why I, because people ask me all the time, Lisa, do you ever eat at fast food? And I say, I can go to several places and get a burger patty, a fried egg, and I can roll it up and I can have fat and protein that my brain and body need. So I think it's doable. It's the things that are fried in the seed oils that worry me. But you're also saying you don't like the source of the meat because you don't know where it is.
I don't like the meat at all. If we had to be technical about the meat coming from conventional farmers, then we'd have to say that's also a processed food.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I definitely see the argument, but we do. So what you and I also run into are people that tell us that cost their financials, they can't afford the bougie meat from the butcher the local farmer, because it is more. It's very expensive for them to raise the cattle without any government. You know, a lot of these different food groups, as we're calling them, are subsidized. And so when they're not, it is more difficult. So then that's when I say you can always get a dozen eggs and boil them and eat them and feed your kids. And you can always get hamburger meat. So I do have to meet people in the middle. Would I rather them eat, you know, locally raised beef that is grass-fed and grain finished, because they say that tastes better? Yes, but it's not affordable for everybody.
I absolutely agree. And I think it's important to meet people in the middle. And my goal really, as one who likes to teach, is saying, I like to give people the information, as much information as possible.
And let them decide.
So if you're just, and let them decide. Right. And because obviously everybody's circumstance is a little different.
Well, what's
and
your
I'd be
third,
sitting here.
Then what's your third? So it's the oil, meat. What's your third one?
Oil, meat, and then third would be sugar, which is why I led in that direction anyways, because you brought up sugar and its impact on insulin. So if we just break down the physiology here, so sugar is going to be broken down into glucose. Glucose is beautiful. It's normal. It's fuel. Our body runs off glucose. We love it. The body just loves this stuff. The brain loves it.
But it loves ketones better, don't you think?
The brain enjoys ketones as well.
That's why I'm on hour 45. Y'all, I could run a marathon. Anybody have a marathon for me to run? Because I feel so good because I'm burning my fat for fuel.
Fat for fuel. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Glucose has this special ability to call on insulin.
Yes.
And when insulin is sensitive to glucose, glucose literally just has to kind of whisper and insulin's going to respond. Hey, insulin, what's up? And insulin's job is just to put glucose in the right space. Yeah. It's going to show up.
It's
going to put glucose where it needs to. It's so responsive and excited to put glucose in its spot. That's where we get our glycogen stores, liver, stored in the liver and stored in the muscle. And then eventually insulin's going to start storing in our fat. Insulin is known as a anabolic hormone. Its goal is to build. Nothing's going to necessarily
fat storing. It is a fat storing hormone.
Yes, it's
going
to store fat.
I mean, it has a job, but it is a fat storing hormone. When people hear that and they go, "And my doctor put me on insulin," I go, "Exactly." And you wonder why the scale continues to go up.
Yes, it's a losing battle. It's somewhat lose-lose in some senses. But eventually we get to this point where if we continually, and I tell people we're not running into problems because we're eating one sugary snack or having one, off meal, one cheat meal or whatever. It's this continuous habitual intake of these highly processed sugary sweet foods. And we're calling on insulin continuously, and glucose starts to yell at insulin because it's so present, and insulin starts to be less responsive. Insulin
That's
has a lot of human traits.
Visual. That's a great visual.
It has a lot of human traits.
That's
insulin is a lot like a rebellious kid who doesn't listen to their parents anymore because they're just sick of hearing
it. Right.
Exactly. So insulin starts to be, it starts to be less responsive.
Right.
And then we're running into the classic case of insulin resistance, which travels on into diabetes type 2. And then we have all these other complications that all rooted from hyperglycemia. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, the
pathology behind these things, when you really dial it back and you start to look at what the body is doing with insulin, with sugar and glucose and all this other stuff, you're like, whoa, wait a minute. Sugar is the culprit. It's one of the main culprits behind why our charts look the way they do.
Right. Subsidized by the government.
Yeah, I shake my head. I shake my head, but I try not to lose hope. But I have a healthy understanding of, hey, it's probably going to get worse. I have to just do my best to
educate
as much as I can.
Because it's free. What the message you have is free. Now, I do want you to write a book, your isms book, and then I need you to, I'm going to need you to write a book because you have a lot to share. Okay, so sugar, I mean, again, it is the devil that it is. What's your opinion on fasting then? I saw you kind of nod, and I figured because the only way to keep insulin low is through putting your fork down and stop eating. So what's your opinion on intermittent or any type of fasting?
I think fasting, just like Batman always has the perfect tool for the job on his tool belt conveniently.
Yes.
I believe we all conveniently have fasting on our tool belt.
Yes.
And it's something
ancestrally.
That,
think about it.
Oh, yeah. I love that you bring that up. I have a natural bias to how we did things in the past.
Yeah.
I just naturally think, if we're talking about Ozempic, for example, where was this 100 years ago? I just asked that question. Where was this 100 years ago?
It wasn't.
That's all I ask. Yeah. So fasting, where was this 100 years ago? Where is this 200 years ago? You keep going back and guess what? It's there. It's there every single time. So it's got to have some merit from that just alone, right? Sure. But then we can look into the actual physiology. And the reason why I started nodding when you were talking about your sodium packets to keep you lively and feeling good, because your body, when you're fasting, it's actually going to urinate out more sodium. It's going to undergo more naturesis and release more sodium.
That is a great point. That's why during intermittent fasting, because people ask me, aren't you worried about, my blood pressure is very low anyway, but aren't you worried about blood pressure? I go, no, during the fasted state, I'm excreting more than really I'm keeping in. When I do a longer fast, I'm peeing and emptying my bowels.
a lot, even though I've eaten nothing. It's yes. because whatever I have, my body's held on to, it flushes out. So it's the ultimate detox. You know, people that spend all this money on these detox things, go fast. Your body will get rid of all the sludge and through autophagy and sick cells and senescent cells that through it's the magic of fasting. That's all I can say.
Yeah, absolutely. The magic of fasting, you actually have residue from meals just resting kind of in your intestines. And when you start to engage in the early stages of fasting, I can't remember the exact hour mark, but you get to a point to where, and I also forget the exact technical term too, but when you're eating, your esophagus does what we call peristalsis, right? Moves the food down. And you have this residue foodstuffs left in your intestines. And this just kind of sits there. It's totally normal. But what fasting does when you start to engage in the early hours is it actually starts to get rid of some of this and has this automatic motion of moving food down toward the colon, down the intestinal tract. And it starts to kind of get rid of this residue. And just that illustration alone kind of makes it click for you, like, whoa, the body is so fascinating. It's so smart.
We are fearfully and wonderfully made, is what the Bible says. And it's absolutely true.
We absolutely are.
But then think about Ozempic does the opposite. People are, you know, gastroparesis. They're looking at where they're not having peristalsis, that food is not moving through because of the delayed emptying. So they're having a delayed emptying. And that's how the glucagon-like peptide, the GLP-1 agonist, is coming into play. They're like, well, that's a good thing. And those of us in the health space are going, no, it's really not. I mean, getting your weight down is a good thing. I will say that, because of your risk of disease, not because of what you look like. I don't care what you look like, but I do care the fact that if you're obese or you're overweight, you then increased your, it's an uptick in your disease that will come from that. So I always want to make that statement. I don't care how much somebody weighs. Doesn't matter. You know, when they come to me, I go, don't care. But what I care about are what your fasting insulin looks like and what your C-reactive protein looks like and, or, you know, other things, other markers. So do you see then that the GLP-1 agonists slow down the digestion process, and that's not good?
Yeah. I say you want your body to be able to use its function without the help of extrinsic factors, tools, to the best of its ability, first off.
That is a good way to put that, because another thing people ask me is, should I take exogenous ketones to help me? And I go, no, because your body makes them.
Yeah, I haven't looked into that particularly, but automatically I just think, so why, right? When the body makes this already,
right,
what's the point, right? So that's kind of my main question behind a lot of the because we're gonna come up with all kinds of things that we can put in our bodies on a supplemental basis, or peptides, hormones, like you said, ketones. We're gonna find some stuff to implement and add. So the question is, what's my body already doing, and how can this potentially help? I think if I can check that first box by telling you, hey, this is what your body is doing with ketones already. Now that you have that information, what can you do by supplementing in these ketones? You tell me, right? I'm just going to give you the information. You know what I'm saying? So that's the goal. It's to educate folks.
Yes, educate folks. And as we said, as objectively as we know how.
Yeah.
Because I don't have an educational institution behind me saying, you have to say it this way. And that's why I'm thinking, why hasn't this boy gone to medical school? And it's the best thing that could ever happen to you, because medical school has an agenda. And so the Rockefellers, we're in Arkansas, and New York is where obviously the original family was, but there are Rockefellers who are here. And so I never want to malign their name, because they are fine folks, but it was the, I don't know, you know, which one, the oil and gas folks that were the ones that didn't like homeopathic remedies and started making them illegal, and only would, and who sponsors the medical schools? The Rockefeller Foundation. And so they're the ones that said, this is your curriculum and don't look anywhere else. And the people who look everywhere else, and that's why I mentioned earlier, it's having the target on their back. They're troublemakers. They're not fit for this society because we are special. No, it's the fact that, like you said, it's people who love learning.
And with a healthy dose of skepticism.
Yes, with a healthy dose of skepticism.
And that's really good. So the thing is, when you run into these issues with medical school and kind of being, I guess the best way to explain it is there's this article I read not too long ago. I actually just refreshed myself on not too long ago. The author's name is Anderlini. That's her last name. Okay. And it's a research paper that she wrote, and she had an incredible quote that I picked out. I'm going to butcher it a bit, but the gist of it goes as such. Physicians undergo cognitive dissonance due to the mismatch of their idea of medicine being an honorable art and the fact that they are cogs in a machine.
Oh. Yeah.
That's I butchered it a bit, but that's essentially, you have this dichotomy of, hey, I believe I want to help people. Mm-hmm. This is an honorable
art.
And
I do believe that.
And then you have the other side.
Right. I do believe that.
Yes. A lot of physicians have an incredibly good heart. And I'll just be upfront of why I didn't go to medical school. I just knew that wasn't my route. I just knew the way I want to teach, I have my own formula already. Right. And it was developing. I'm still learning. I'm still developing it. Don't get me wrong. Right. But I just knew that the way I was going to help people wasn't going to be through me being a specialty physician. Mm-hmm. I'm not anti-school or anti that or any of that. I totally am not like, do your thing. I just knew, I had a healthy understanding of this is the route I'm going to take and this is how I'm going to choose to help people. And I think about that dichotomy, that mismatch that a lot of physicians face. And it disheartens me, for one, because that's their profession, right? Mm-hmm. But you do get some gems, like you brought up Dr. Fung, the nephrologist who's good on fasting. Yes. You get some gems, and there's a lot of gems in the YouTube space. Dr. Ken Berry.
Ken Berry, everyone needs to go follow his page right now. The Proper Human Diet. Carnivore.
He reached out to me not too long ago, and I was very happy to have his support.
I hope you walk to Tennessee to be on his show. Do not delay.
That's a sign. I'm gonna dive a little
kidding.
Deeper.
Darren, my producer and I have been trying to get him on my podcast. So you get on his, and then you say, "Hey, I got a girl in Arkansas."
There you go.
Because he has absolutely, and I love to see the haters get on his page and tell him he's an idiot because he says to eat butter, and he's like, "I'm not," and he doesn't care. I mean, he doesn't care.
Yeah.
Have you looked into any of the, and we, I know we need to wrap this up, but have you looked into any of the research by Dr. Thomas Seyfried? He's the man behind the metabolic approach to cancer. And he's saying, I mean, he's got the science. Otto Warburg from 100 years ago, German researcher who found that cancer is a metabolic disease, not genetic disease. And there's how you feed the cancer tumor, you starve it. And so fasting, you fast for 7 days and you can reduce your cancer load, I think, by 95%. Like, it's insane. Wow. And he's 74 years old, still teaches at Boston College. And I told him when I interviewed him, I said, "You're a very brave man because you were saying things that Big Pharma no likey. And and the medical school attached to Boston College no likey because they make a whole lot of money on chemotherapy and radiation." And he's saying, but he said, he goes, "In all fairness, I'm not saying don't do it. I'm saying prepare your body for it by fasting for 7 days, by getting off sugar, eating a high fat ketogenic diet, getting sunlight, all the things we talk about. Then your body's ready if you want to take the poison, because it's poison. We know that. We know radiation obviously is a class one carcinogen. It causes cancer. Well, we're giving you radiation, all the things." But I really appreciate people. And he's 74. And as of this writing,
can I get his name again? I actually have not. I'm not familiar.
Thomas Seyfried. Oh, my gosh. He is a genius. He's a PhD, Seyfried. And you reach out to him at Boston College. He'll get back with you. He'll come be on your podcast. He does them all. And he is an absolute genius. But it's people like you and him that are saying, "Here, let me let me show you some options here. And that's all I want people to do. I don't care if they do it my way. I don't care if you eat like I do, if you talk like I do, if you hop on one foot like I do. I don't care. I just want to make sure you know what's available and you make the choice that's best for your body. Because it's your body, your choice, right?
Absolutely. Oh, hey, be careful. No, absolutely. I mean, isn't that what they were saying? Yeah. That's how it goes, right? That's the messaging. I could not agree more. I'm not one to say that I don't eat processed foods. I'm not one to say that I'm perfect in any way.
No.
But I feel so much freedom knowing what's going on in my body.
That's it.
Knowing what I should do as an implementation, knowing what tool I should pick off my tool belt in order to fight whatever I'm kind of going through.
Yeah.
Whether it's from sleep, exercise, breathing, nutrition, you name it.
We could do a whole thing on breathing too. Breathing is a fascinating thing.
Oh, man.
And people need to follow Gary Brecka. And I do think, is he a PhD? I can't remember. But he was on Rogan in December, you know, a 3-hour interview, because that's what Rogan has. Maybe November, December. And but breath work is one of his tenets. And meditation is valuable. And red light. These are all things, y'all, that cost nothing.
Nothing.
Ozempic is expensive. I'm trying to save you people money.
Yeah, there's, and I hate the fact that we even have to call these alternative interventions, alternative medicines.
It's not.
I can't stand the word alternative.
It's
this
not,
should be standard.
It should be right. It should be primary.
This
the
is
first
standard.
One. Johnny, you are a delight. People need to follow your channel. All the information about you, no lab coat required, will be in the show notes. But people, you need to follow him on the YouTube. And what is your Instagram growing?
I am on Instagram. I'm going to pivot into make a little bit more Instagram reels, more stuff there. I like to just do stuff and I'll talk about it. So do engage with me there.
Okay.
It's the same exact thing. No lab coat required. Okay. And you're going to start to see some stuff coming up real soon here.
Okay. Drop the mic here. You are great.
Thank you so much, Lisa Fisher. This was excellent. I'm going to start calling you Auntie Lisa.
Oh, dude.
I had so much fun. Definitely have me back sometime and we'll hammer it out again. Thank you so much. I take seriously anytime somebody gives me the opportunity to talk on their platform. So
good.
Thanks. This
great.
Was fun.
Glad you're here.
Thanks for listening to the Lisa Fisher Said podcast. If you would, leave a review and follow the show. This podcast is produced by ClantonCreative.com.